Blog Talk Radio.
When you're down and troubled and you need some love and care and nothing is going right.
So, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radioland. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Try saying that fast three times. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we are going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Gosh, sounds so nasty every time I say it. We have an exciting show planned for you today. Lynn Barrington, author, life and songwriting coach, speaks on grief and loss. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. I am your host today, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial. Oh, yeah, and they're also very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, come on, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember, every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they start to tell you about all the emergency stuff, like if the oxygen mask falls out of the ceiling and loss of cabin pressure. Please, if you're with a small one, put your oxygen mask on first before you begin to help them with their mask. Now, that sounds like a very selfish thing to say, doesn't it? But the reason they say that is because they know from experience that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above theirs. And then guess what? You won't be of any help to anybody. Well, caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing, just what we need, another thing. And this one's called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, the only way out of the grief process, that's right, is to go through the grief process. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and loss, especially if you feel like you're kind of stuck. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show and my radio podcast and my books and my videos and my blog. Gosh, it sounds like it's all about me, but it's not. It's all about you. Just go to my website, davenass.com. That's Dave, and then the first four letters of my last name, N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, DaveNass.com. And also the actual name of our show works, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com, if you can't remember all of that. So go to my website and take my free quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout? And just for doing that, I'm going to send you a free copy of my book. I'm going to email it to you, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. And it is still getting rave reviews on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So come on, don't miss out on this very informative quiz that will assess where you are in the burnout process and get my free book just for doing that. Amazon is still selling it for almost $10, so it's a very, very good value. In fact, I would say it's a great value. I want to take this moment to thank my last guest, Tina Canarella, last week. Caregiver to her grandma with dementia. Powerful interview on elder care. So to hear this great interview, go to davenass.com and find the podcast or go to iTunes and you can hear it there. And in fact, you can hear this interview and every interview afterwards on my website. They all become recorded podcasts. All right, enough of that. I'm going to unmute my guest today so that we can hear her, Lynn Barrington. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for patiently sitting through all that introduction stuff for our first-time listeners.
Well, you're welcome, Dave. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate you having me on your show.
Lynn, the honor is ours. Thank you for doing it. Let's just get right into it. Please introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you do.
Well, I live in the Nashville area, and I'm a best-selling author with Simon & Schuster with a book called Daddies and Daughters, and I'm a life and songwriting coach. I coach people all over the United States, and in fact, I have done international coaching, and so I really enjoy what I do.
Wow. Lynn, I introduced you as an expert on surviving grief because you've had a number of close family losses in your life, from your beloved mom to your daddy, and that's what we call dads when you live in the South, daddy.
That's right.
To your very close brother, Joe, to your two adorable dogs, Otto and Ben, and most recently, your mom's sister, your aunt. And how do you manage to survive blow after blow after blow like this? And how long does it take to get through those grief processes? I would think that as soon as you were through grieving one loss, that it would just start all over again. Tell me about it.
Well, I think every loss is different. I think with my brother Joe, it was especially hard. He passed away with colorectal cancer. He was just an amazing man. It was really tough because he was 59 years old. My mom, however, was 93 and a half. She had me when she was 40, so I had her 53 and a half years, and it was her time. I was very accepting of that loss, even though we were best friends and she was like hooked to my hip. It was just a more peaceful transition. But my brother's transition to heaven was a real challenge for me. It was a real challenge for me. When my dogs died, when Otto died and Ben died, that was especially hard. When Ben died, I was in South Korea. I was taking Jose Feliciano on a tour over there. He passed away, and that about killed me. It was really challenging. Everyone is different. This last year, in fact, I've had six people that were very dear friends passed away. It was like every other month. Each one is different. I think that I've come to this understanding that this is the time of my life that I'm going to lose people. And so you have to have a plan of how you're going to deal with that each time you lose.
Wow, that's a very interesting perspective. I don't think I've had anyone on this show, and I've done like 31 shows, who has had as many losses in as short a period of time as you have. I'm anxious to hear what you are learning from this. So let's get into my next question. You're familiar with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She has this five stages of grief. How did your grief mirror the grief that she speaks about? You know, the denial, the anger, the bargaining. I'll ask you about the last two stages later, depression, acceptance.
I'm a person who doesn't really believe in a book that covers that you're going to go from this stage to this stage to this stage to this stage in a particular order. Like I said earlier, each one is different. With my brother, I definitely had denial, anger. I didn't have bargaining, and I just skipped to depression and then acceptance. So I skipped one of those and that one. And with my brother, it was the biggest learning for me about death. And that learning curve with my brother Joe really established how I deal with it now. I learned so much in that particular process that really right now what I do is I just go right to acceptance. I don't have denial about it. I don't have anger. I don't bargain. I don't get depressed. I just accept. I've really learned that it's really not in my hands. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm sad that my friends are gone, but I know that there's more to life than this life. So I like to celebrate their life and remember the best about them and then move forward. That's how I've done it this year, and it seems to work.
Well, you seem like a very smart person who learns from their experience. Obviously, you did go through the five stages of grief, or actually four of the five stages the first time. Apparently, you've learned something from that, so that when you had to go through it again, it was like, oh, I know this test. You know, it's like going to school and having to take a test that you've already taken and gotten 100% on, or maybe you didn't get 100% on, maybe you only got 90, but now it's like a no-brainer. So congratulations for learning how to deal with the denial and the anger, because I think that is the goal. I think God allows grief to come into our lives so that he can teach us how to deal with it, because there's going to be a lot of grief, right? Jesus says, in this world, you will have tribulation. That sounds like grief to me. Sounds like loss to me.
Exactly.
So would you agree with that statement?
I would agree, but it's just the way it is. We're going to live and we're going to die. The process is to learn how to live and live in an excellent way and learn how to die and deal with death as it comes in the same excellent way. So you have to decide what you're going to do. And the grief is hard on some things, and particularly, you know, those when they're really close to you. Even like I mentioned, my dogs, that's a tough thing. And so you miss those little babies that you love so much. You miss them. And I still miss Otto. I still miss Ben, and I love them. But I have Jerry, and Jerry's alive, and I have to take care of Jerry. So you have to concentrate on what is before you rather than what is behind you. And remember what is behind you in a positive way. And remember the good things. And let the bad things go away. Let, you know, the Lord wash you of the bad things and cleanse you from that. And just remember the good things. That's how I do it, and it's working.
Sounds like great advice. Now, I introduced you as a life coach. So what type of issues do you deal with your clients when you're being a life coach? I would assume that you deal with grief as well as some other issues. So maybe you could talk about that for a little bit.
Well, I do deal some with grief, not a whole lot, because I think that's a very specialized area. Usually what I deal with in life coaching is basically how to get a plan and move forward. And I usually deal with people who are stuck and they want to progress. Mm-hmm. They don't want to stay the same place. And so I encourage them to find out what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and see if you can get the weaknesses over into the strength column and just look forward and make a plan. That's really what I do. So that's how I do. I really don't deal that much with grief. Some of the things that I have dealt with in life coaching as far as grief is concerned is many times when you're young, you make a decision like a child would make a decision in a severe situation and decide, well, I want to be able to make peace. I want to always be the person who makes peace. And so they make that 8-year-old decision, and then they find out later on in life when they're 40, 50, or 60 that, guess what, always keeping the peace is not working out for me. That was an 8-year-old decision, and I can't always keep the peace. So that has come out of very severe situations.
Yeah, it's kind of like in one's career, climbing the ladder to success, and then when you reach the top, you realize the ladder is leaning against the wrong building. So that probably prompts some midlife crises. Do you talk with stuff like that as well?
Yes, I do. And what happens is people realize, why am I continuing to do the same thing over and over again? Or why am I going through the same test over and over and over again? And usually it's because they haven't looked at what the test is. They haven't really looked at it or noticed it. So that's what I do to help them do that.
That reminds me of what someone told me one time, the definition of insanity. I know this is old, you probably heard it, but it's doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Why do we do that? I mean,
well because the same thing sometimes is very comforting. You're not having to go outside your comfort zone. That's why you do the same thing over and over again.
That's right. It's all about that comfort zone. We like to be
it
comfortable,
is.
Don't we? Snuggle in our warm bed and pull that blanket up over our
That's
head.
Right.
And the alarm clock is saying, no, 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 you got to get up. Oh, we're snoozed.
You've got to move forward.
Well, you sound like you would be a very good coach, Lynn. Anyone out there who can relate to what she's talking about, we'll give her contact information at the end so that you can possibly employ her as your life coach, because I've spoken to some people who've done that, and they said she is worth every single penny. I do coaching, too, and I actually a lot of times, but that's going to change, I coach people, but I don't charge them. And I've discovered that they don't listen to me a lot. So
that's
I shared
exactly
that with
right.
another life coach, and she said to me, you know why they don't listen? And I said, please tell me. Is they don't listen because you're not charging them. And I says,
what? That's right. That's one of the reasons I charge. And I charge a lot. Because the more they pay, the more they listen. The more skin in the game, the more they listen. Because they've usually got a spouse or someone in their life that says, hey, you paid this amount of money. you better do what she says, because apparently something's working that she's doing and what you're doing is not working. That's exactly right.
Yeah, it reminds me of that line in the movie Father of the Bride, where the man's daughter, who's now going to get married, they were going outside, and he says, "Sweetheart, I think you should get a sweater out. It's cold outside." She says, "No, Dad, it's not cold." And then all of a sudden her fiancé says, "Oh, honey, you know, it is kind of chilly. I think you should." And she goes, "Oh, you think so? Okay." So it's like familiarity breeds contempt. That is so true.
That's exactly right.
And we will listen to a stranger's advice over a trusted friend. I don't get it, but I guess it's just human nature. Well, Lynn, we're having such a good time talking to you. You are so knowledgeable. We need to take a 2-minute break. We will be right back, so don't go away.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You will be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's NASS. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we are back with Lynn Barrington, author, life, and songwriting coach. So we're talking about grief and loss here. Lynn, I'm so excited. We're talking about a very important issue here. You have been through the ringer with grief and loss more than anyone I know. And yet, you're surviving, and you're more than surviving. In fact, I'm thinking of that verse that says, you are more than a conqueror in the Bible.
Well, I count on that verse a lot. I count on that verse a lot.
Well, it shows. Lynn, depression, as you know, is a big issue with caregivers. That is probably the one thing or the one feeling that someone is going through before they think about committing suicide or actually perform the act of suicide, because if you're not depressed, chances are you won't try to kill yourself. And I know that depression is at epidemic proportions, and doctors have many things that they didn't have before, like antidepressants, and we'll talk about that later. You've shared with me that you've dealt with depression at one time. Tell me, how did you cope with that?
I did. I struggled with depression, and I'm the type of personality, because I'm very outgoing, I didn't even realize I was depressed. I just thought everybody felt sad when they were home and away from people, because I knew I was very outgoing. I came across some wonderful people in my life. One of them told me, just said, sat down and said, "Listen, there's something wrong with what's going on with you," and was really honest with me. Once I figured that out, at the time, it was many years ago, and at the time, new drugs were just coming out, I started on Paxil, and it really helped me. And I took it for several years. I got stronger and stronger. The doctors felt like it was okay for me to come off of it, and I did. And I've been very proactive about not doing things that encourage that depression to come back. That's what I've done. I'm conscious that it could. I'm more conscious that I'm not going to let it.
Yes, good decision. When we talk about depression, there's always a debate going on, especially within the church. I know this friend in particular who is a Christian who struggles with depression. He struggles with it so bad at times that it has put him in a psych ward at the hospital. One time it actually put him on a suicide watch. Now, he loves God and he has strong faith, and you would never know that he struggled with depression. I believe that's a kind of clinical depression where there's some kind of chemical imbalance going on in his brain.
Sure.
Yet he refuses to be on any type of medication or antidepressant because he thinks that it would be compromising his faith and trusting God. What's your feeling about that, where you don't want to?
I think a long time ago that was the thinking. I think the thinking has changed, and I certainly have gone through not anything as severe as that. I do think that you can make decisions for yourself. When you have a clinical issue, your system is not working, your nervous system's not working correctly, or your blood sugar's not working correctly, or other areas of your brain are not working correctly, I think there's no difference in taking Paxil or whatever kind of drug that is appropriate for the condition that you have. There's no difference between taking that and taking an aspirin for a headache. I don't see that there's any difference. If they alleviate or really help subside the effects of depression, I don't see what the difference is. That's how I look at it. I'm the type of person, and I encourage those people that coach with me, that you have a choice in life. You can choose to move forward, you can choose to stay still, or you can choose to choose. And sometimes we think we can only choose the right and the wrong, but sometimes, and I think many times, you can just choose to make the choice. Even if it looks like there's no choice to make, there is always a choice, especially proactive way to look at things. I learned that in a convention that I went to one time. This group was all watching, and the guy pulled me up and pulled another person up, and he put two ice cream cones in my hand, and one was chocolate and one was vanilla, and he said, choose, and I choose the chocolate one. He goes, great, and he turned around, and he got two more ice cream cones, and it was chocolate and vanilla. He goes, choose. I chose the chocolate one because I like chocolate. They took that chocolate ice cream cone away so fast because they were doing the example. I didn't get even a bite of it. It was kind of irritating. And so then he put two vanillas in my hand. He said, okay, choose. And I said, well, I don't have anything to choose because I like chocolate. And he goes, choose. I had both vanillas. I said, well, how can I choose? They're both vanillas. He goes, choose. And sometimes things come up and they look both the same. It's like depression or being depressed and keeping your testimony or keeping your testimony. So you have to choose keeping your testimony. And sometimes it's not the way you want to keep your testimony is how that works out. And so what happens, I'm kind of rambling, but what I'm saying is that you have to choose what you think is the best thing to do for, in this instance, to keep your testimony. If taking a drug that your doctors prescribe that you know will help lift your serotonin, then you've got to do that because you want to keep your testimony. You want to be a positive person full of the light of Christ and full of love. And I don't see how you're keeping your testimony if you're not taking a pill and you're staying depressed and you don't have hope and you don't have faith. How can that be keeping your testimony? You have to choose.
You know, Lynn, you had mentioned earlier that this is a good time to be depressed because the medical profession has come up with new kinds of antidepressants and new groupings of antidepressants, how they work and so on. And it is true that there might be some people out there who tried one particular antidepressant and it didn't work for them. In fact, it made them feel worse or it gave them different side effects. Well, go back to the doctor. Maybe the dosage is wrong. Maybe the group that it's in is wrong. Don't give up. There are many different options out there. And sometimes you just have to tweak it a little and find that right mixture and that right combination to do it for you, because what's the alternative? Potential suicides. And there are way too many people committing suicide these days. I mean, I think of Robin Williams. What a tragedy. They did an autopsy on his body. There was no alcohol, no drugs in his body. So here's a guy who just had a history of depression, and he kind of lost control of it, didn't keep it under control. And I can't think of anybody who had more to live for than Robin Williams. Great, great guy.
Great guy, so talented. And I want to say, I do think medical community has made great strides, but there's something that's even better, and that's what has helped me. When you call out to God, and I'm a Christian, and I believe in God, and I believe in Jesus Christ, and when I've called out to Jesus, and I do it regularly, when things come, it's not like I have any perfect life here. It's not like that things don't hit me all the time. And I mean, even last week, and I think you know this, I dropped my phone, my smartphone, and I was about to leave to go out of town and go to a convention, and I had all these things going on, and I did have this one little flip phone that was on another number. And I mean, I felt like it was going back to, you know, smoke signal to talk to people. But I still had communication. But it was very challenging. It got to me. It really got to me. And I had to call out to the Lord numerous times to keep a good attitude. There was a couple of times when I was like, ugh, and just wanted to just, you know, kind of give up. All because of a telephone. And that faith, knowing that I could cry out to God and go, oh, Jesus, help me. Give me peace in this. It's just a telephone. It's going to be replaced. I'm going to make it through. But it's the same kind of thing when you're going through grief. There's moments, and that's not to say that I live, that these six people who died in my life this year, that I did, there wasn't any sad days. That's not true. There were sad days because I'm going to miss them. That being sad is different than being depressed and being depressed over it. And I recognize when the depression would try to come in, because depression is a deep, dark, black hole. That's what I call it. Yeah. So when that starts to come in, I just have to pray and say, God, this is what I know you do not want from me. I know you do not want this from me. And so I cry out for your peace. And God is faithful, and God is good, and God loves every person so much. And if you just cry out to him, oh, God, help me. Oh, God, give me peace. Then give me wisdom. And the Bible says that if you ask God for wisdom, that he gives wisdom to all men liberally who ask. And so he will do that. He will guide you. And that has really done better for me than Paxil ever did.
Mm. And you're not on Paxil anymore, right?
No, no, no.
You're on Jesus.
I'm on Jesus. He's my man.
Well, that's a great testimony, Lynn. Now, I want to take another break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. And don't go away.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program, every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years. After she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech-impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke. like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go, to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassar.
And we are back again with Lynn Barrington, coach, author, songwriting coach, speaks on grief and loss. Lynn, I have to say something about my commercial. I just love to brag on my wife. That's why I wrote that first book. In fact, that's why I'm in this ministry. It's all because of Charlene. She is so amazing that she is my inspiration. I look at her. I have no right to complain about anything. I mean, I broke my ankle on a bicycle accident, and I'm whining about how it hurts, and she gives me this look like, yeah, buddy, try living in this body for 15 minutes. Don't whine about your little pain. And, of course, you know, she is compassionate, and she kisses me sometimes when I'm in pain, but mostly I snap at it, and I say, yeah, you're right. What the heck am I feeling sorry for myself for? You know, we can always find someone in worse condition than us, and all of a sudden, that complaining spirit just evaporates like the morning fog, and we have this spirit of gratitude, which is a wonderful thing. Gratitude is so cool. If the whole world would just act grateful for what they have, right? That old story about the man, I saw a man who didn't have any, how does it go? I didn't have any shoes, so I met a man who didn't have any feet. When he met a man who didn't have any legs, and so the story goes, I think I said it backwards, but you all know what I mean. Well, Lynn, let's talk about the final goal in grief, which is what? You know what that answer is?
Acceptance.
Acceptance. Ding, 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 ding. 100 points for Lynn. Yes. So how do we get there? How do we stay there? because we arrive, things happen, right? That bumper sticker, things happen. That remind us of our loss. We have opportunities to go back into anger or some of the other stages, depression. Mm-hmm. Tell me your response to that.
The first thing that reminds me of this question is I remember after Mom died, Mom and I used to sing this song, Three Times a Lady by Lionel Richie. And I would come home and I'd always sleep in the bed with her, and we would talk till 2 o'clock in the morning and then pray. And then we'd listen to this song, Three Times a Lady, once, twice. And it was a great song, and I just love that song. And after she died, I'm not kidding you. Every time I went into a grocery store, Muzak was playing that song. I would get like maybe halfway or a quarter way through my shopping, that song would come on, and I would just go and leave the grocery store. So for about 6 months after, maybe even longer, after Mom died and Joe died, because they died within 90 days of each other.
Wow.
I would not even go to the grocery store. My friends would go to the grocery store for me. I wouldn't even go into Walgreens, because Walgreens was the worst. I could barely even get through the door before that song would play. It was just crazy. And then one day, I really needed something. I forgot what it was, and none of my friends could help me. And I just had to make a decision that I was going to have to listen to that song. And I was going to have to listen to it and not collapse in the middle of the grocery store. It was ridiculous. You kind of have to go through those things that you have to figure out a way to negotiate it. Because just because you come to that place of acceptance, and I do get to it fast deeper than most people do now because I've had so much loss. Mm-hmm. Really, that's when I first hear they passed, or I always say they transitioned from this world to another world. They just moved. You know, Mom's just long distance. Joe's just long distance. Daddy's long distance.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still a part of me, and I remember so many things about them. I miss my mommy every day. I still call her mommy. I love her so much. You still have to negotiate those things that come because it's natural. It's part of, I don't think it's part of the grief process. I think it's part of the acceptance process that you learn how to negotiate. I remember there's a song called Not Far From Heaven by Los Lobos Boys. I love that song. My brother loved that song before he died. The night he died, he was in hospice, but they thought it'd be a couple more weeks or something, and I thought I was going to be able to go back, and I was going to a concert at the Raymond Auditorium in Nashville, and my brother Bill called me and said he just passed. I just couldn't believe it. I just collapsed on the floor and left with my friend Jane. She took me home, and I just couldn't even believe it. I couldn't believe it. And I couldn't, that's another song I couldn't listen to because it has a distinct opening, a guitar opening. And when I heard that, I mean, I flipped that off the radio channel just as fast as I could get it off. And one day, it was like 3 years later. And in fact, I stopped listening to radio for some time because I didn't want to be caught off guard. And one day, I just happened to have the radio on, and that song had kind of passed, as music does. It passed as on top 40. All of a sudden, that song came on, and I was in the middle of traffic in Nashville at 5 o'clock. There was no place for me to go. And I had to keep both hands on the wheel. I think it was raining. And man, I just drove over to the side of the road as quick as I could get it, and I just fell apart. But after I fell apart that one time, I could hear that song again. I had accepted my brother's loss. It had already been 3 years. But you have to learn how to negotiate it. It's not about going back into depression. It's about learning how to negotiate it and be strong and get stronger for each and every time that something comes your way.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm reminded of not all grief and loss has to do with death. Sometimes it's losing a love of your life. And I'm reminded of the woman who was in a long-term relationship, wanted to get married, but after 5, 6, 7, 8 years, this guy just wouldn't marry her, so she broke it off. It took her a couple of years to get over him because she really loved him. When she was finally over him and she felt good almost 100% of the time, and in fact she found another guy and was engaged to be married. One day she got a report that her old boyfriend was getting married, and she thought everything was resolved, but all of a sudden she broke down and was a mess, and she didn't know why she was taking this so hard, because she was over that, she was fine. All she heard was that he was getting married, until she finally came to the conclusion, oh my gosh, I thought he just didn't want to get married, but he didn't want to marry me. And so sometimes we get these revelations, you know, and it hurts. And it hurts,
sure.
And it just comes out of left field. You never saw it coming, like a Muhammad Ali left hook, and you're down for the count. So yeah, I can totally relate.
It's all about, though, when you're down for the count. Count is only three. One, two, three, and the referee hits the pass.
Good point.
But it is your choice to get up on 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10.
That's true.
It's your choice every time.
You have to decide,
I am not going to lay here on the mat. I'm getting up.
And going back to the subject of suicides, so many people think when they're depressed, where they're going to take their life, they are so in their mind about this is a hopeless situation. There's no way out. This pain is never going to go away. And it's just so permanent to them. when they need to remember.
That, and all of that is a lie.
Right.
That is all a lie.
It's all temporary.
The fact of the matter is, God has a future and a hope for every living human being. That's the truth.
Amen.
And so all of the rest is a lie. And again, it's the choice whether you're going to lay down on the mat and believe the lie or gird yourself up and get up.
Yep.
And go.
There's a Bible verse that says, just very simply, this too will pass.
That's
and
right.
So many times I went through
you
some
have to
financial.
Decide that, though.
Yes. Through Charlene's stroke, I kept saying, this too will pass, this too will pass. Through my financial collapse during the financial meltdown in 2006, 2007, I had to keep telling myself, this too will pass. And look at now, it's almost been 7 years past. I'm still alive. I'm still breathing. I'm still happy. I've got a radio ministry. I've got writing ministry. If I would have believed those hopeless lies that the devil was feeding me, who knows what I would have done? I would have given up all hope. But this
That's
too
right.
will pass.
You had your wonderful Charlene. Who,
yeah, she's already been through it, so she
could,
was
I
like
mean,
a
how
pro.
Much did you really complain in the end? Yes, maybe the finances weren't there, and yes, maybe things were harder than they were, but you still had her. And she
right.
was still willing to keep going, and if she's willing to keep going with her fantastic attitude, then you sure better keep going.
Good point. Well, let's talk about what healthy emotional habits that you have implemented in your life, and you might have already touched on this, but go a little further, that keeps you on track and balanced, you know, with the curveballs that life always seems to throw us. Emotional habits.
Well, I think absolutely the very first one is my faith in the Lord Jesus Christ and how he has rescued me. Literally, he is my best friend. He is my great love. I love him so much. And I love him because I know he loves me. I know he loves me. And so that is my number one emotional habit, that when life throws a curveball, and usually it's not a ball. Usually it's like at least a basketball size. Not just a baseball size. At least a basketball size.
Ouch,
and
that would hurt.
Sometimes it's trucks, and sometimes it's all kinds of things that come my way. I know that no matter what has come my way, God has a future and a plan for me. That's when I just cry out to him and ask him to help me. That's my number one emotional habit. After that, I would say is that I'm a fighter by nature, and I will fight you. I will fight the enemy. It's just in me to fight. So that's a habit. You have to have a habit to fight. I would say not just fight, but fight for. I can't remember what the phrase is. Anyway, there's phrases that you can pick up and keep yourself going, that you read or you hear on TV or someone says to you. And that's what sometimes I use different phrases that help me do that. Mm. That's another thing. And then just common emotional things that you decide to listen to good things and put good things in your mind and don't watch TV shows that are evil TV shows that are about demonic things. I put
right.
good things in my mind, and I listen to good songs, and I read good books, and I try to keep good things in my mind, because the rest of this stuff does not help you, does not help you in any way to move forward, especially when you're in grief. You've got to be very protective, and when you're in grief, the number one thing you can do, the number one thing you can do besides call out to God is to read his word. There's nothing that's going to help you, that's going to give you peace more than reading God's word. Even if right now you happen by some strange thing, be listening to this show, and you might be in a hotel, usually there's a Gideon's Bible. And the very first place to go is to go to the New Testament and go to John. That book will really help you and encourage you. You can go to the Psalms, and David went through so many hard things. The Psalms are very, very comforting. that's another very strong emotional thing that you can do.
Mm. Great advice. I want to take a break before I get into this next topic. And so why don't we just do that, and we will be back in a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
You're listening to Dave Nassani, the caregiver's caregiver, on Blog Talk Radio, where each week we talk about surviving the grief process and avoiding caregiver burnout. We'll be right back.
A place where mornings are manageable, where solutions are found on every corner, a place when you get the most out of a lunch hour, where there's no distinction between day and night, a place to go when you need it, but want it good. Oh, thank heaven.
One day at Chevy's, Peter saw Carlita eat a fajita, and he needed to meet her. From then on, nothing could be sweeter than seeing Carlita and Peter seated for a Chevy's fajita. Grilled over mesquite, Carlita and Peter were Chevy's fajitas repeaters, not retreaters. They'd eat a fajita on the street, or for fun, on a totter teeter. With a Cuervo Gold Margarita, Carlita succeeded to eat a Fuego Habanera fajita on a parking meter. But Peter'd eat a tequila-fired chicken fajita only while seated. He was discreeter than Carlita with his fajita. But one day, on his way to meet her, Peter rode a speedy cheetah with a San Antonio steak fajita for his beloved Carlita. He needed to feed her. And so, as Carlita and Peter repeatedly conceded, Mamacita, you just can't beat a Chevy's fajita. Come into Chevy's today for an eater fajita fiesta. Chevy's, viva la fiesta. And don't forget to eat a fajita with a Chevy's Cuervo Gold House Margarita. Nothing could be neater.
Welcome back to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, Avoiding Burnout and Surviving Grief with Dave Nassani on Blog Talk Radio. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you. Join Dave and his guests now as they resume their discussion.
And we are back with Lynn Barrington, author, life coach, songwriting coach, an all-around amazing person. So, Lynn, I wanted to just tack on something from the last thing we were talking about emotions. I use an analogy. I'm the king of analogy, I've been told. I just love analogies, and sometimes I overuse them. And people say, all right, enough. You don't have to tell me 17 different times the same thing. I use this analogy when it comes to heart versus mind. I know Joyce Meyer wrote a book called Emotions, Can You Trust Them? Most of the time, emotions are the culprit in a person's instability and unbalanced nature. I like to visualize the brain as being the smart one and the heart as being the deaf, dumb, and blind one because, you know, they're stuck inside the cavity of your chest and they can't see, they can't hear, they can't speak. But they can sure make us feel. And a lot of times, now we need a heart. We need to feel things. We need
to feel,
you know, fall in love and all of that stuff. But we also need a brain. And there needs to be a balance of power, like Congress and the executive branch and the judicial. There has to be a balance of power. If you give any one branch or any part of your mind or your heart veto power, then you are in trouble. Because if the brain is constantly making decisions in your life, you're going to be emotionally bankrupt. And if you allow your heart to make all the decisions without your brain, then you're just going to be a dummy. You're just going to make stupid mistakes that are emotionally based and driven. So you've got to have a partnership with the mind and the heart. And they're both talking to you. I mean, it's almost like you can hear the heart in the left ear and you can hear the mind in the right ear, and you need to listen to both of them, and you need to weigh them, and you need to pray and all of that stuff. All right, I said it. What do you think of that, by the way?
Well, I think it's not just the heart and the mind. I think there's a spirit. I think there's the spirit and the flesh. And I don't think the flesh is the mind, and I don't think the flesh is the heart. I think it's a combination of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think then there's your spirit man. If you're a believer in Christ, then you have the Holy Spirit to lead and guide you as you walk the positive, the stronger way, the loving way, the lighted way with your mind and your heart. So I look at it maybe a little bit different. I don't think it's one or the other. I think it's both in tandem, submission to the Spirit of God in you. That's what I think about that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your faith. I see your faith is very important to you. Not everyone going through grief and loss are people of faith. What would you say to those people who just don't believe in God or higher power, and they struggle with the grief process? So take a couple of minutes and talk about that.
Well, I think if you don't believe in God or higher power, and I know plenty of people that don't, some in my own family, I think then you're limited to what is in your control. In that manner, I would say, again, it's, you have to determine that you're going to stay positive. I think that there's many things you can do that's in your control that even as a Christian you can do. That's one, determined to stay positive. I think you have to take time for yourself, even if it's 30 minutes. You take 30 minutes. I think that's very, very important. Because if you don't take a moment for yourself, then resentment begins to build up. But if you do take a moment, just a moment for yourself, the body is an amazing machine, and it can go and go and go and go, but eventually you have to take time for yourself.
Right.
I think you have to decide to keep your sense of humor, because you can do a lot of things that are really, really hard if you have a sense of humor. My sister-in-law has been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer this summer, and so we're going through that right now with her. And I tell you, she has been absolutely an inspiration to me and to my brother and to our whole family. I have not seen, at one time, I have not seen her say one negative thing to the doctor, to the nurses, any text. And I stayed up with her for several nights in a row. And you know how it is at the hospital, they interrupt you about every hour or hour and a half. And she was so nice to every one of them. And it inspired me because, you know, when you're in the middle of sleep at 3:30 in the morning and you're over 50 years old, you know, you want to have a little word or two of correction. And not one time did she do that. And it really inspired me. So she had determined before she went into the hospital how she was going to behave. And so I think it's very important for you to read and learn about what you're dealing with. Get other people's takes on it. I think it's important for you to just say no and have some boundaries. I think it's important for you to eat and try to eat as healthily as possible. And then every now and then, have a banana split. Just every now and then. Treat yourself. I think it's highly, highly important to sleep as much as you can. And then I think it's very important for you to accept imperfection yourself and in others. I think it's very important for you to have hobbies, have songwriting and singing and acting and art, all of those kinds of creative things. Try to do something like that.
Amazing. Yeah, I was going to ask you in these last couple of minutes what pearls of wisdom or takeaways you have, but it sounds like you just gave a whole bunch right there. Anything else you want to add to that, or that's plenty?
Well, I would say, I want to go back to the songwriting since I am a songwriting coach. We are going to advertise me here a little bit.
Absolutely.
If you'll go to www.bigboldsongwriting.com/DN, that's for Dave Nassani, so I'll know it's from this show, then you can see a training that I give on songwriters, and I have some upcoming webinars and things that you might be interested in. And if you're out there and you're trying to write, many people going through grief try to start writing songs. That's what I've done for 35 years is coach songwriters. And so that's something that you can start – to do, have something that's of yours that you can develop that doesn't have anything to do with the grief process or care, being a caregiver. And sometimes you can be the character, I mean, all the time in songwriting, you can be the character. So, you know, the madder you get in a song, the better the song usually is. And the happier you get, it usually the better it is, the more grateful you get. And so that's a great outlet. So many of the things that you can do and you can take control of yourself are things that you can do that are positive. And that will help you not only get through these stages of grief, but really keep in that place of acceptance and knowing that your life has purpose and your life has meaning. And I just feel led to say that if there is anyone listening that is considering suicide, I want you to consider this more than anything. Number one is that God does have a plan for you. He has a hope and a future for you. I want you to also know that there are people all around you. A dear friend of mine, two friends of mine, committed suicide last year, and a year and a half ago. And I just want to say that all of their family and their friends were really affected. All of our lives were deeply affected, and it really hurt. People love you. So I just want to say, decide not to do that, and decide to tell somebody. There are many people, your friends or your family or other people that want to help you walk out of this. Mm-hmm. And I know that you can do that. Don't listen to those lies. God made you as a special person, and we need you here until it's his time for you to go.
Wow. Again, Lynn, how do people contact you one more time?
You can contact me at www.lynnbarrington.com, or you can contact me to see the songwriting video at www.bigboldsongwriting.com/D as in David, N as in the Sanny.
Okay. Well, Lynn, thank you again for allowing me to interview you, making you talk about the kinds of things that are making you like I got a gun to your head.
No, I didn't feel that way at all.
You've been very, very helpful to my listening audience, and thank you. I know they thank you as well. And to my listening audience,
my pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Standard Time. And again, we broadcast on Saturdays at 3:30 p.m. That's also Pacific Standard Time. And don't forget that all of our shows are recorded podcasts, including this one here. You can listen to it on our website, davenass.com, and iTunes. By the way, when you are on my website, please don't forget to take that Are You a Candidate for Burnout quiz so that you can get your free book emailed to you, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. Thank you again for tuning in, and God bless.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yeah.